through everyone on this list. So we're just going to kind of try and take these in the order that seems appropriate. And my intention today is to allow the members of the committee an opportunity to ask questions of these individuals on the list, and specifically an opportunity to go over the audit that we recently received. For the benefit of those that are in here observing today, please be aware that the microphones in here are very sensitive, and your side conversations may be audible to everyone. Someone asked me to mention that. So, and that goes for the members of the committee as well as everyone else in here. But also, just be aware that there are several new members on the committee that were not on this last year, and there may be some questions asked that seem like we're going over old territory, and we're trying to get people up to speed here, so bear with us a little bit. If some of this seems repetitive, it's not our intention to have to drag this through needlessly, but understood that we do need to get up to speed a little bit. So my intention today is we will, I understand after Senator Courtney gives a brief opening statement, that we'll have a statement from Dr. Stalker, and then after that other representatives from IASB, and then we'll move on to the audit itself. So with that having said, I'll turn it over to Senator Courtney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you all for being here today. I'm proud of the work the legislature's oversight committees done investigating the Iowa Association School Board Association misuse of taxpayer dollars intended for schools, teachers, and students. I know this organization has attempted to reform its policies and procedures to regain the trust of Iowa school districts and taxpayers. However, I still have concerns that the IASB lobbyists are trying to persuade state lawmakers to carve out new exemptions to the disclosure requirements in Iowa's open records laws, and that the IASB board member has declared, an IASB board member has declared publicly that we do have things to hide. Under the current open records law, that all school boards, and I know this especially because I served on a school board for a number of years, student disciplinary records, personnel records, trade secrets, and some other information are exempt from public disclosure requirements. I'm not sure what else you could have to hide, but it troubles me that one of your board members still holds this belief. I'm concerned that although IASB has instituted numerous reforms intended to safeguard public money, some basic steps have not been taken. I'm especially concerned about the actions or lack thereof by the IASB to get over $52,000 back from a former employee, Maxine Kilcrease. And more troubling, the inability to require current employee, Mary Delgado, to repay almost $30,000 in excess compensation. I'm concerned about reports that even after Dr. Stalker took over as interim director, the association paid over $17,000 in severance pay and 401k contributions to two employees, one of whom had worked at ISB for 6 months. According to media accounts, auditors said they couldn't find a record of board approval for those payments. I'm also concerned that the board continues to not receive timely financial statements and that management does not tell them what records the media is requesting. I look forward to hearing from the auditing firm, the interim director, Dr. Stalker, and the board president, Russ Weasley. I hope what I hear today will alleviate some of the concerns I mentioned. It's our job on this committee, it's always been our job, to demand answers for the Iowa taxpayers. The audit we'll be hearing about today is for fiscal year 10, the past year when most major issues were discovered. I fully expect to have this committee continue the work in providing additional oversight to IASB and to work on legislation that makes sure IASB and other organizations like them are accountable. Let me repeat, the Iowa taxpayers deserve answers, and if anyone in this room thinks that the IASB is not a taxpayer-funded organization, they are very, very wrong. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator. I think in the interest of time, we'll just move on directly. I know that Dr. Stalker, the interim CEO of the IASB, would like to make a statement before we open things up. So I'll turn it over to you and go ahead and hit the button there. The floor is yours.
My opening remarks are very general. At some point this morning or tomorrow morning, I'm very happy to respond to the questions that Senator Carty raised. I believe we can show you progress that's been made. We can provide substantive reasoning about, or at least explanation of some of the questions you've raised. I would tell you that in the packet of information you received, there's a cover letter that addresses a number of those points. Before I came to the Iowa Association of School Boards, I've been retired. Prior to that, I was a superintendent for 10 and a half years. I know the value of a strong school board association, what it means to our member schools, what it provides, what would be difficult for them to do at the same cost without an association. And so when I came on board May 3rd, the charge I was given and the mission I was given was to help the board identify very clearly the steps that needed to be taken to regain the trust and credibility of our organization. I believe we've come miles since then. I believe there are areas that we're still addressing, but it doesn't mean we've chosen not to. It means we have been working very diligently to repair our organization. Our intent is to work with you, not against you. And in the open meetings, open records law, I define in your cover letter those areas similar, directly trying to match those protections given to K-12 schools. As you look at that, or if you would like to ask questions later, I would be happy to explain how we see the correspondence between protections of what information can be kept private between K-12 schools and our association. And I'm happy to do that later in the session. We also offer and extend our willingness to be accountable for our measures, our actions. We have taken steps to provide agendas, financial statements, audits on our association website. Those are there for our members to see. Our board financial statements are current through the end of November, and the ones for December have been reconciled and are in progress. We have submitted draws to Federal Department of Education for the grant money that we receive. We're current and moving forward. Those things will all be on our website and available to our members. So whatever measures you determine are appropriate in terms of accountability measures, quarterly updates to this committee or to our member schools, a subgroup that works with us to determine how best to move forward openly, we stand willing to work with you and be a part of that. Those are my opening remarks, Senator Courtney, and I'll respond to any questions at this time or later. And I think you want the auditors now, is that correct?
I think what we'll do is, we've got the auditors here tomorrow as well, but maybe not all representatives from IASB. So I think what we'd like to do is maybe, at this point, I know that Senator Sodders has some questions maybe for you and others of the organization. If it's all right, I think we'd like to go ahead and do some Q&A on that right now, and then maybe we can come back to the audit a little later. But I want to make sure that Senator Sodders has an opportunity to ask his questions, and then if there's any other members of the committee. But it's not my intent that this is directed just at you, but anybody else, if you'd like to defer in your organization, or if the member has a question for somebody else in the organization, we can go that route as well. I'm looking for the list of who's here.
May we invite Russ Weasley, our board president?
Absolutely.
And Dr. Tack, our chief financial officer.
Yep, we've got Dr. Lee Tack and Russ Weasley and some others as well, a couple of board members and that are here as well, but I think maybe the executives might be best situated to answer those questions. But I think I'd like to go that route now, if that's all right with you, Senator. And then I'd like to recognize Senator Sodders.
Thank you.
Try turning yours off, please.
Okay.
All right, it's all working now. Thank you. Thank you for joining us again.
I just have a few questions, I guess, and maybe since we have everybody up here now, I can kind of go through a few questions I have. Can anyone answer what your exit strategy is as far as a search for a permanent CEO?
The board has begun that process. They have selected a firm that works not only in Iowa, but with other state school boards of education that comes to us with an experience in placing chief executives in school board associations in other states. That person has met with every board member, prepared a survey to go out to all member schools, and will be meeting Thursday with our advisory committee to elicit input from them. What do you want? What are you looking for in a new chief executive officer? What do you think it takes to keep our ship moving forward? The board meets with the firm. Ted Blasing, who is an Iowan experience with Iowa Education, is our contact with the firm. And he will meet with the board various times in February to pull together, with their help, the profile for the person. The expectation, I believe, is to have that person named prior to the middle of April. I can't give you the exact dates. Maybe someone here can, but.
It's online, but anyone can figure it out or answer questions.
The process is also posted on our website.
Okay. We'll be trading this back and forth. Normally, you get more than one of these things to work at a time.
Yeah, apparently, and I don't
know. No one can interrupt.
That's how you can control it.
That's.
Well, whoa, everybody.
No, I'm probably the one.
I think this is fine. We can go back and forth. We'll just have to keep going back and forth on this. Can you answer why the FY10 audit was delayed?
I'd also ask that you direct that question to our auditors. However, there were, again, personnel changes. We wanted to make sure that all the information about pay schools, one of our business programs, was current and up to date. And when the finance director from previously, who worked with that program, we found it difficult to access those files. We found them, we put together what we need. They can give you a better answer, but I believe it was just the time it took to gather all the information.
Thanks. Has the state auditor's office given you an audit yet?
State auditor's office was in at our association. They spent most of a week there. They were asking for records from 06-07. They've continued to ask for information. We provided that, and as they left, they said with their backlog it would be some time, and I'd ask Dr. Tack, who worked most closely with them, if there's any more to fill in.
No, they said, as Dr. Stalker indicated, it may be some time before they're able to respond back. They're still gathering additional information. An exact date, I don't know, but they're following up on a request that was actually made by the association's board, I think in 2008, and so they are following up on that request.
Thank you. And I read just a little bit, because I just got this morning, but what has been done to recoup the money from Max and Kilcrest? And there's also some money owed by Mary Della Gardell. But as I read through a little bit here, it does say that we're still trying to get a little bit of money from Dr. Kilcrest. And I also see that demand has been made for repayment of some from Dr. Della Gardell, but that's in dispute. Just curious how that's going.
We have... The basis of the demand is the auditor's determination that the payments that she received retroactive from like December of 2009 to July of 2009 were excess benefits. She denies that. She disputes that those were excess benefits. We have had discussions with her and her counsel, who is present today here. We have not been able to resolve it ourselves. When Internal Revenue Service comes in to review, they will make the final determination as to whether or not there are excess benefits. We will submit a proposal to the board at its next meeting in March concerning whether or not we proceed to start collection of those monies prior to a final determination as to how much, if all of it, is excess benefits.
So that leads me to my next question. Why is she still working there?
We've taken the position, which I support, that Dr. Delagardel's work is respected. Our Lighthouse project is multi-state and international. As a researcher, she's highly respected and brings a great deal to our organization. And so we were asked by her attorney, through her attorneys, by Marion through her attorneys, to discuss the overcompensation, to agree as to whether it was or wasn't, and to agree on member methods of repayment. That's been in the works. And I felt ethically and professionally that until she said, no, I'm not going to, that while we were in a discussion negotiation phase, that there was no reason to give up what she brings to the organization professionally.
I'll let that go for now. I'm sure somebody else will have maybe a follow-up to that. But you've also, it seems to me, we've got some of the stuff is being delayed, partly because you stated earlier there's not enough personnel, there's a personnel change, but yeah, you've hired another lobbyist. So wouldn't it have made more sense to hire more personnel that could get this information put together than another lobbyist?
Our lobbyists are feeling the effect of the ongoing investigation of our association. Of course, when they introduce themselves to people, they feel they've lost their effectiveness on education issues. And so we've asked the Brick Gentry Law Firm just Friday to provide the person who works for them and is here at the Capitol full time to be the liaison with us about the questions of this committee, how we can best work with you and move forward. That's their only role. It's a short-term, limited expense. And while it may seem strange to you from your point of view, for us, our focus, we are a member service organization. Our purpose at the Capitol is to advocate for legislation that addresses the educational needs of our members. This limits their time to do so. And so for the short term that we're meeting with you, and if it goes on through the end of the session, then it's going to cost more. But we're hoping that we can come to a way to move forward and work together. And we've not hired a full-time lobbyist, is the answer.
Thanks. This next question is for Dr. Tack. When was the last time the board received financial statements?
The board received financial statements at their last meeting, but they were not as current as we would like to see them. We would like to get to the point that we have monthly financial statements, and the financial statements, for instance, for December, would be provided no later than, say, the middle of January. At the last meeting, I have to think about what was January 12th, and there we were current through November of the financial statement.
Any reason that they were behind? What was the reason they weren't getting?
I could see, I think there are several reasons. One is the experience of the staff, and I think that another one is maybe the overall staffing of the association. But we're working with the resources that we have, and we came into the year with a balanced budget, and we would like to maintain that. So we've hesitated of actually adding staff to the accounting area. We may end up in a situation where that is what is going to be required. But I will say every week that goes by and every month that goes by, we get closer and closer to meeting that, so we have a good handle on the financials from a monthly standpoint. That is our goal, and I do believe we are going to achieve that goal.
Thank you.
One final question, this is for Russ. Since Maxine has left, has the board had an opportunity to meet with staff members without any management present?
I don't know if we've ever asked to meet with them. We meet with them individually. We've had them come into our board and give reports. But the board member has never been restricted to going to talk to any staff about any topic as long as it's not personnel issues.
There were, well, through this investigation, we know that there was some restriction of staff members talking to the board. I'm wondering if there is a policy in place now that at least sometime during the year you guys, the board can pull in staff members without management so that they can kind of get things off their chest without reprisals.
We were always able to do that before Maxine came, and she sort of put the kibosh on that. But as when I took over in January last year, that's one of the first things that we had a discussion about, that she could not limit our board member access or the access of our employees to a board member. And we had a rather heated argument about that, and it was determined that that is the, they would have open access either way.
Thank you.
Representative Pettengill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple questions, one of which was the monthly financial statements. Last year, the board went 6 or 7 months without having a financial statement, which was not acceptable to any board as far as I'm concerned, but the reporting on the November, knowing that that was our concern last year, the lack of monthly statements, that resources aren't being put towards getting current, I have a concern with that. The summary page that you gave us here, when you're talking about the operating within the requirements of the open meeting, open records laws, you specifically say correspondence between K through 12 in your opening statement. You said the correspondence between you and your members, correct? The information, it's my understanding that the information that was being requested through the open records from the Des Moines Register were not between K through 12 and the organization. It was strictly organizational records that they were asking for. Is that correct?
I'd have to go back and look at every request, but substantively, yes, you're correct, or primarily. Until the last board meeting, our board had taken the position that we were following, as laws become effective July 1 following their passage, and that we were subject to July 1 forward. At the last meeting, at the recommendation of our attorneys, and with the agreement of senior management, senior leadership, we believe it's time to open everything. However, as in K-12 schools, and that's what I tried to define for you here, we would like the protection in these areas. And part of what we have said, I've heard myself say it a number of times, we just want clarity on what can be protected. And so as I begin to tie it to K-12 schools, you have an internal personnel issue. But here's an example of a communication. A superintendent or a board member calls us, and they have a rather unpleasant personnel issue unfolding. And they ask for direction on the scope of their authority. What can a board do? And for example, the advice we give them is if a board member talks to an employee about an issue, and that comes to any kind of disciplinary action, the board member has prior knowledge and has to recuse themselves. And so we give them that kind of advice. Well, if those emails were made public, what is a private personnel matter in that district, we've disclosed. And so that would be an example in the personnel area of things we would like to protect. Legal issues, same thing. If there's possible litigation in a K-12 district, either coming toward the district or initiated by the district, those are executive session topics. They have the privilege under the law to discuss that in open session. We're asking them, same thing. And then the last one is business programs, because we're a member service organization. We have programs that our members can utilize that we negotiate a fee that's less for them than they could get on their own. Well, the spirit of competition and getting the best price for our members. We would like, when a school district is buying land, as an example, there are some legal contracts that you best serve your association and your members if you can have the beginning level of discussions in a closed session. That's all we want to protect. And so we are more than happy to give anything else that's requested. However, what we don't know is, as the executive director, I just say, well, we're withholding these. Do you want anything else? If you do, I'll send it. I'd like to say yes. But what we're wondering is, do we need corrective legislation that allows the privileges for executive discussion in a K-12 district? Do we need to define those as well for our association? May I just do that? Maybe you can tell me. Or do we need corrective language in the legislation that was passed last year? That's my answer.
Can I add just a couple of... What we're asking...
Before we go on, I just want to point out we got our problems fixed with the microphone. You're welcome to leave them on at the same time now. Thanks.
What we're asking for is no different than, say, the League of Cities. If the city of Des Moines writes to its organization, the League of Cities, and says, we've got this issue, can you give us some advice? That's not a record. Those communications cannot be attached and oftentimes they're embarrassing. I was on a school board for 13 years. I know that the superintendent from my district posed questions to the school board association that he would not want to see read about in the Des Moines Register. On the other hand, some board members asked some questions about the superintendent that we wouldn't want to see in the newspaper. And so those are the kinds of issues that we're concerned about. Another issue, we are different than a school district in that we conduct business. At one time, we had a program called IGEM, where we sold gas, natural gas, to the school district so that they could level out their expenditure for natural gas. When other companies got into that business, we felt that there was competition and we were ready to pull out. We hired a business appraiser to to come in and give us an appraisal of the value of that business. We would have to do that in open session now. And that doesn't make sense if we're trying to sell a business. So it seems to me that we are a little different than just the school district. And we're posing the question to you, should there be some exceptions that take into consideration the slight difference that we have, given that we are a business and that we are in competition with some of our former employees who are doing the same things that we're doing?
Okay. Several follow-ups to that. Some of your, I'm sure that we are going to have some clarification to the law last year. We've already had that discussion. However, considering the number of entities that you have under the Iowa Association of School Board and even one for not-for-profit, and there's been a lot of mission creep, do you consider those business entities that you have under your umbrella subject to the open meetings proposal that you have? And I also noticed in one of the things that you provided today that you're going to go back to people and with communications within the organization to see if they think this is should be kept confidential or not. And I have serious concerns about that.
The question, your first question is, do we consider the separate entities that we work with, the ICECAP, the ICEJET, ICEBA, subject to the open meetings law? The answer is yes. Those entities are subject to open meetings and open records. To try to give you some perspective, as the legislature was debating the open records, open meetings law as it might apply to us, we received communications from former employees saying, you ought to be opposed to that. When it was adopted, they indicated you should fight that legally. We took the position that no, we were not going to do that. Shortly after it was adopted, there was a letter opinion issued by one of the assistants to the Attorney General that said that in our case, it did not apply to records that were accumulated prior to July 1. That was kind of an informal advisory letter that was sent. We asked for a formal opinion on that issue. The Attorney General responded that since you have had employees that have threatened to sue you if you release their records, and given the fact that you have been asked questions about records that predate July 1, we feel that there is a strong possibility of litigation, so we do not want to issue an opinion in that case. Seek counsel from your own in-house attorney.
I did read that.
I then asked the board, you know, one, we don't want to be sued by folks. We'd rather not have to go down and spend money going down that route. So what we will do is that if there is a request that predates July 1 and it impacts work that was done by a former employee, we'll notify them and say we are going to release these records, much as we did when we released the salary information to this committee. We sent a letter to former employees saying, we're going to release this information. Do you have any objection? And if you do, you should take whatever action you feel is appropriate. They responded to us that they had no objection to the release of the salary information, but they want us to notify them in the future if other information that they have worked on is to be released. So on one hand, we've got outside people who are threatening to sue us. We also have the strictures of the open records law where our board members can be fined and censured. And so we're kind of caught between the devil and the deep blue sea. So we felt that in an abundance of caution, we will notify people, and if they want to bring an action to preclude us from turning over the information, the ball is in their court. Otherwise, we're going to turn it over if it does not meet one of the exceptions.
Okay, thank you. The memorandum that your organization completed, yes, it lists the known status of investigations, but it did not mention the IRS review and any consideration to your nonprofit status. Would you tell us, do you know anything about that?
We have not heard from IRS at all yet. We anticipate, because they read the newspaper like everybody else, and so we anticipate that at some point in time we will probably get a call from them, but we can't anticipate when that will be or what will be the scope of their review at this point.
Okay, so considering this document, then no one currently is investigating organization.
We are not aware of any IRS investigation at this point in time. The only thing that the only investigation that we know about that's going on are, one, whatever the state auditor is doing, and two, the Polk County attorney is reviewing.
Okay, those are pending. All right, let me see. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. I'm going to jump in. I got a couple follow-up questions on what Representative Pettengill was saying. For whichever one you want to respond, you say it here in your cover letter that the association is prepared to release information prior to July 1, 2010. That reads to me like you've got it. So if it was the decision was made, we need it, you'd be able to turn it over in relatively short order. Can you address that and give me a time frame? Because now I've heard some other things about contacting members, and I'd like to know a time frame from today. When could those emails be delivered?
The two comments. Well, all emails have been maintained, and no emails have been purged or deleted or anything like that for anything prior to July 1, 2010. In doing an email search, and the association does not have an archive system or a specific search system like you might find within state government for the purposes of expediting doing the search. The number of records on the most recent search was 4 million records were looked at. It takes approximately 1.5 days per search to complete. And that's just simply because of the number of transactions that are going on as what people are using the system as well as the search going on. So for any one search, that's our best estimate of how long it would take depending on the complexity of it. Even if we narrow the search to day specific, it still has to go through those records, all those records, to be able to pull out the appropriate data, the appropriate email. But the emails have been preserved.
So you're saying in a day and a half, conceivably, they could be delivered?
Per search. That's typically
per search. So, yes. But if it were a shorter time frame, say it was a year prior to July 1, 2010, that'd be a substantially shorter amount of time to deliver those emails, right?
And it essentially takes the same amount of time whether we're looking post-July 1 or pre-July 1 because of the records that it has to go through and the archives that it has to go through to be able to pull that up. So it doesn't take any less if you're looking at it after July 1.
And I guess I, by way of a few comments, I think your questions about some of these things are well taken in part. Some of the executive discretion things and certainly the attorney-client privilege things. The business programs, I guess, I'm a little skeptical on. It would seem to me that
anything that was 7 months ago and before, most of those negotiations have probably been completed at this point. I mean, do you have any ongoing business negotiations that you're trying to address that carry back that far? I mean, you understand where I'm going with that, right? Did you enter into a negotiation last June that's still ongoing that you want to preserve?
Yeah, and I cited the iJump program not to say that we necessarily wanted to maintain that in isolation forever. What I cited it for is to say that while we were trying to determine the value of that company, we wanted to be able to do it in a confidential way so that the general public wouldn't know the value that we placed on it.
Sure.
And I would think that most of the information concerning the business at some point certainly should be made available and made public.
But so I guess what I'm hearing from you then is that if not right now, at some point very soon, you could release anything that you might otherwise have wanted to exclude under the business program's exclusion here. Is
yes.
that correct?
Yes.
So we'd be able to see all of that at some point. Did you want to address that?
I want to just expand on that a little bit, that the association has a number of contractual agreements with the vendors that are providing services. And those contractual agreements oftentimes will specify a given rate or negotiated fee. And they will also have a confidentiality clause in them that if the information is going to be released, you have to have the permission of the vendor to release any information about the contractual arrangement or how the fees were structured. There is also basically an ongoing fee determination on a program such as Pay Schools. Pay Schools is one where parents can go online and pay for their children's lunch program, activity programs, and so on. Those fees may vary from entity to entity that is providing them, and in many cases that has been a negotiated rate in there. So it's an ongoing activity as well on that particular program. The other ones tend to be more multi-year contractual arrangements.
That's understood. I think that's maybe not completely satisfactory to everyone on the committee, but I understand that you're saying you have a contractual obligation with your vendor that puts you in a hard spot with the Freedom of Information Act request or an open meetings law. I think we probably need to explore that a little further, you know, and rather than just accept that it's contractually barred. I think with the complexity of modern contracts, there may be other things in there which would allow you to divulge that information, but we'd have to look at that, and I'll defer to the lawyers. Okay, but anyway, I wanted to make sure that we were clear on the whole issue of emails, because I know that at least for myself and several members of the committee, we really want to see as much of that as possible. And I'm glad that you're prepared to release that. And so I would encourage you to do, I guess, whatever you think you can do to be ready to do that, to deliver as much of that as you can. Certainly we don't need your emails from, you know, ancient history, although maybe we do. But I think it would help in the process of restoring credibility and helping to close certain chapters of this to get that out and not have that linger any further. So. I'm sorry to have jumped in. I think that Representative Bogler was next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for coming back again. For those that haven't been on the committee last year, here's last year's stack of stuff. And so it appears that you've provided a lot of information that doesn't contain what we want. And Dr. Stalker, I can appreciate how stressful this is on you. You look tired, so I'll try to make it brief.
Do I look tired?
Yes, you do.
Oh, dear. More sugar.
When you took over, when was that?
May 3rd.
May 3rd of last year. It's my understanding that there was a knockdown drag out on what should be released. You was on the side to release everything to get this out in the open, and you was not allowed to do that. Could you give us some insight on that problem of not, who didn't want to release the information to us?
I'm not sure I remember a knockdown dragout. However, from the beginning, our members have said to us, without disclosure, it appears there is something to hide.
Yes.
I believe, you're going to have to just give me a little latitude here, because I want to be very careful that I don't misstate anything.
Well, maybe I could help you out. You sat in the back of the room early in this investigation, and you come up, and you said it is your intention to give us everything. To get everything out in the open. Do you remember that?
I do remember that. Yes,
and,
I do.
And many of us here feel that you're holding back, or that the group is holding back, you're redacting information, et cetera, et cetera. And then I get information that there was a problem within, an infight, quote, a knife fight, if you will, about how much to release to us.
I'd like to respond just once to that. Our board, and I didn't disagree, took the position that until we know that we can protect things that we consider personal privileged communications about sensitive issues, we're not going to release anything. I have always taken the position, once we have, and I've said this many times, give us the clarity and you can have it all. At our last board meeting, our board took that step. The holding back, and I understand the impression that's been given. I don't disagree with that. I get it. We didn't know what we could protect, and there are things with our member districts, there are things of our own personnel, just I don't need to try and give examples. That absent knowing we could protect that, we said July 1 forward. We are now prepared to do July 1 in retrospect, but continue to ask for the privilege of protecting that information. That's all we're asking, and we hope in asking that we can say we aren't hiding anything. The appearance of hiding was not knowing what we can protect. But I understand, and that we took it on the chin a lot for that, as you know, both in this chamber and with our members. And so we gradually began to see we need to make a clear statement of what can be privileged, and then throw it open. And that's what we're asking, how we can work with you to move forward. We don't want to hide stuff. We just need to know. And if we're gonna be your partner in moving forward, that's what I'm asking for. And I apologize for the long answer.
Representative Bodler, I would just like to make one comment on that. Everything that this committee has asked for, we have provided to you. Everything. The only thing that we held back for a little while was on the salaries, because of the threat that we got from former employees about the lawsuit. Ultimately, we gave you the salary information that you were requesting. So, to my knowledge, everything that you have asked for, we have provided, and will continue to provide.
Is there a place that we can go to find out the salaries of all of your employees for the last, say, 5 years.
It is, I think it's currently posted on the oversight's website in there through 2009. The last committee meeting, the previous one, you had requested 10 years of salaries that was provided, and then I think it has been posted out there. We do not have on our website, though, the current salaries of individuals.
Where's it bothering? It's in your staff. It's kind of in your staff. So,
things in there.
Thank you. And in here, the memorandum from your law firm, the results of the FBI investigation have been turned over to the Polk County attorney. Contact the Polk County attorney, et cetera, et cetera. Is anybody from the Polk County attorney's office here that can respond to this, where their investigation is? I mean, how long? It appears that sitting here last year and this year, we're kicking the can down the road until we all forget about this. Now, maybe I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But that's what it appears. That if we can just provide more information, et cetera, that this will go away. So I don't know whether anybody's here from Polk County Attorney. Are we going to charge Maxine Gilchrist? I mean, there's $60,000 out there that's in question. That's a lot of money, you know.
We'll certainly ask them the status of it. We also would like to know their opinion on this. I would also like to go back, though, to a comment you made. We believe we made every effort to provide you with what you wanted. Are there other things that you believe the committee has asked for that we've not provided?
Not off the top of my head, I can't think of it.
Please let us know. It's not our intent to withhold.
When we found out that the FBI had closed their case and returned and turned all of their information over to the Polk County attorney, last week we called the Polk County attorney. Of course, their work is confidential. And so legally they really can't tell us much other than there is an ongoing investigation, they're reviewing it, and they thought that their work would be complete in some fashion by mid-April. And that's basically all that they could tell us. We want this to be over just as much as you want it to be over. And if there was anything that we could do to accelerate it, we would certainly do that. We're not delaying it. And the criminal charges are beyond the scope of our jurisdiction. We volunteer ourselves and would make ourselves available to give them any information they want that might be helpful in their investigation.
I understand that, sir. But when we have on page 4 of your report here, memorandum, you have question after question after question of thousands of dollars of salary, and it looks like to Joe Citizen out there that nothing is being done. In fact, one of them has continued on the payroll. And you explained that earlier, Doctor. Whether I agree with that or not, it looks bad.
I understand that.
So I would hope that your organization would push the Polk County Attorney's Office for results in this investigation one way or the other. You can't kick the can down the road. Mid-April will be about done here in the legislature. I'm just saying what it looks like to Joe Citizen out there.
Well, we certainly will do everything we can to encourage them to expedite it. We would like to have it behind us, too.
Appreciate it, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Father, Representative Peterson.
Thank you. I'm new to the committee. I'm Janet Peterson from the northwest side of Des Moines. Thanks for being here today. And my apologies because I'm still trying to get up to speed and trying to digest all of this. It's not an easy task. Mike, I have a couple questions for you. The first one pertains to the six subsidiaries. I'm not sure if I fully understand the governance structure of each of the six subsidiaries. Do they report to the IASB Board of Directors?
Are you asking about the ICECAF, ICEJIB, those?
Yes, and could you maybe, instead of referring to them by acronym, give me the names?
The Iowa Schools Cash Anticipation Program was developed in response to members' needs for pooled borrowing. When we, and it's in its 25th year, that if schools, in terms of cash flow management, state aid payments come in regularly, property tax payments don't. And so there are times when districts experience low cash balances. And so by pooling all their needs and borrowing a larger amount of money through ICECAF, it's a cash management program, and it was designed 25 years ago to be member gains. They have their own board. IASB members sit on the board. Each board has legal counsel, financial advisor, underwriters, whatever is needed for the goals of the committee. Iowa Schools Joint Investment Trust, ICEJIT, is similar except it's a pooled investing. When schools have bond issue money, or if they have local option sales tax money, we quote a rate and encourage them to go to their local bank to see if the bank can match the rate. Our goal is not to take it away from the local community, but to leverage the best rate for our members. They have a board, same composition, IASB board members, legal advisor, all of those components. ICEBA, the Iowa Schools Employee Benefit Association, which provides health care benefits, a program that schools can utilize for their employee health care benefits. They have a board. In fact, they're meeting tomorrow afternoon. That is a joint program with the Iowa State Education Association. So there are members of IASB and ICA on that board.
A 2080 agreement with that?
Is that 2080? That also has been in place a long time. By 2080. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think what those come under the umbrella of LGS, Local Government Services. So IASB has a wholly owned subsidiary, LGS or Local Government Services. That's our for-profit programs that we've been talking about. Funds from those then are used by IASB to provide the no-cost member services that we provide, board development, leadership development, finance, education, those kinds of things. LGS has its own board, same thing. They are all subject to their own audit, correct? Did I leave any out? The Iowa School Boards Foundation is our research, it supports our research wing arm, excuse me, not wing, research that's provided to member districts and, do I need to wait a moment? All right. What have I left out? What else is on your list? But the point I would want you to hear is that every entity has its own board. ISB is represented on that board. They're subject to their own audit. They have their own bylaws or articles of incorporation.
So you named five? What's the six?
Skills Iowa is not a...
Not a separate entity.
That's a service through IES, or it's been funded by a grant. A safety group, that's property and casualty insurance that's offered through Employers Mutual, and it provides property and casualty insurance to schools. And over the years, it's been negotiated so that it has broadened the coverage while keep, and depending on the loss ratio at the end of the year, members can receive a dividend back. We're trying to keep rates low while at the same time looking at loss ratio. And if there's, rather than taking the profits at EMC or at ISB, members get dividends. And that, that's going out right about now, this month of February. That should be all.
Do each of those boards that govern those six subsidiaries follow the same board guidance that you like on nepotism and all the different policies that you've outlined? Are those changes that you're making to IASB also funneling down to the subsidiaries?
Because they are a wholly owned subsidiary of us, yes.
And are member dues used in any or all of the six subsidiaries?
No. No, LGS is a, because it's a for-profit, I need to go back and look at those audits. Please ask the auditor that question, because I'm going to babble a little, and I don't want to, because then it looks like I'm either hiding or don't know what I'm talking about. Lee, is there anything you'd like to say about, do member dues support LGS programs?
No, I can't say that the members do support those programs. Some of the programs are more, I'll say, passive, that are provided, there's the business services are provided by the vendor in there. But the members do not use support that. Those are self-sustaining programs, and those programs will pay a sponsorship fee or an advisor fee to the association or to LGS. And that's the way that they're kind of structured. On a contractual arrangement of how that is to deal with. Dues do not support those programs specifically.
And do any of the member, do any of the employees of IASB also work for any of those six subsidiaries as part of their responsibility?
Yes, and there's some crossover in terms of there are employees that are working for LGS and paid for LGS, but they also have administrative functions in there, and vice versa. You have some association staff that are probably providing overall administrative services. And some examples of that, because of the chief executive officer is going to sit on those boards, the chief executive officer is also paid by the association. When those boards or one of those services pays an administrative fee or a sponsorship fee to the association, then there's that crossover.
Okay, and then the last thing I wanted to touch on was back to what the association is asking to keep confidential, and I understand that there may be some things as an association that you do need to keep confidential, but I also, want to touch base with you on paper talking about not being able to use a black Sharpie marker. And I guess my comment is...
Okay, again.
My comment on why other organizations have no... Why other organizations don't seem to have a problem using a black Sharpie marker, but you had to make a new document versus open records of using a marker and passing it on so it doesn't look like you're trying to manufacture something.
I will take responsibility for that. I took a magic marker and marked out things that I thought fell into the category of attorney-client privilege or were confidential under the statute. When I held it up to the light, you could read it. And so I then asked our bookkeeper, if she could go through and just delete those areas that I had marked out. That's the mistake I made in not telling Mr. Coffin where I had done it. In some instances, you could tell that there was something left out. There were probably some instances where he couldn't tell that. But we have provided him with copies now that show where items were deleted.
Thank you.
We got about 15 minutes left. I've got three people, I guess, that we still want to get to, so just be mindful of that we may not get all the way through this, and I'd like to reserve just a few minutes at the end. So with that, I want to represent Jeffkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I can direct this question to you. I apologize. I'm new on this, and I just want to make sure I understand. What is the legal basis for this this group? Is this set up under the laws of incorporation under the Secretary of State, or did this group come about by separate legislation? What's the basis for their existence?
I would defer to them. I have to assume it's an incorporated entity under the Iowa Nonprofit Corporation Act, and it's not specifically enabled by statute. Is that correct?
That is correct. Yeah, that is correct. It's the organization is 65 years of age. It was originally incorporated as a nonprofit corporation under the laws of the state of Iowa. At one point, there was a question raised as to whether or not school districts could pay a membership fee. There is a provision in the Chapter 279, I think, that authorizes school districts to pay a membership fee to us. It also requires that we provide an annual report to you, the legislature, and that we identify what we spend for lobbying, and that's information that we're required to provide on an annual basis.
And then one more quick question, again, a very basic question. Is there anything in the state budget where there's a line item where we make an appropriation to the Iowa Association of School Board?
I don't believe so.
I don't believe so.
Thank you, that's all I have.
Representative Cressing.
Thank you, and hopefully you can hear me.
I point out that we picked the right man for this particular
fight. Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for coming today. I had a chance to visit with Ronnie, as I was instructed to call her.
How would you please?
Ronnie. And you can call me Bob, that works too. The real thing, and it's this document that is the salaries. And maybe it's already been talked about. Of course, I'm new to this committee, but I looked through this and I highlighted some things that just seemed to me over that period of time from 2001 to 2009, there were really some pretty good salary increases that occurred in several groups. And one person, I won't mention the name, but in a four-year period went up $172,000. To me, I just think that is so egregious. And so what I'd like to know is, I know that this goes to 2009, I assume we'll see the 10 salaries, and we'll get a chance to reflect on what changes have occurred. Has there been a decrease in salaries for some of those people? And what strategies from management, your position, and from the board's position on how you're going to try and make sure that salaries are equitable for this association going into the future? I think for me, that's one thing that I need to know. I'd like to know that right now, if you have that.
Our board has established see if I can do better here, has established a compensation and benefits committee. Their first responsibility is to clearly define the scope of authority of the executive director, because we have had a procedure over a number of years where, as I, and Russ, help me if I'm wrong here, the executive director was given a salary budget. The association set the executive's salary, and then that person was given a salary budget and could distribute it among the staff as he or she chose. Our board is putting more teeth in that policy. They have asked to approve all salaries on an annual basis. They are developing a set of protocols or administrative rules that say any increases mid-year are subject to board approval, to take away the arbitrariness, the randomness of someone getting a bonus or a salary increase mid-year. And over the years, we have some examples where that occurred. And so what the board has done, one of our policy revisions clearly identifies the scope of authority of the executive director. It is then referred to our Compensation and Benefits Committee to develop the administrative rules or guidelines. And Joan Carbon, one of our board members, is on that committee to define the percentage of salaries increases that we must work within, the comparability groups we must use, and we have from our national association, the National School Boards Association, comparables with, we can look at what executive directors or other positions within the organization. We can look and see what they're paid in states with similar budget, associations with similar budgets, similar composition. We're not gonna look at California. Nobody looks at California for a comparable, but we're gonna look at like states and like associations. That's one comparable group.
Well, and so, but here's my question. When I see the 10 salaries and they're submitted to me, am I going to see some of the large increases that have incurred corrected? Is that also part of the strategy of this compensation committee to say these increases were above and beyond what they should have been? We're going to correct that. And we're going to make sure that they're appropriate. I think people need to be paid appropriately for their jobs and duties, but in some of these instances, it's pretty significant.
And without going into specific individuals, some of the increases that you may be looking at there reflect the severance pay for 2009. And you'll find in 2010 that individuals are no longer there. So a little bit of apples and oranges comparison, perhaps, in some of those numbers. But when the W-2s and the 1099s are completed, which will be at the end of this month, then we can make the comparable data for 2010 available.
And so just one last question, because I know it's time. We will see that information then. When will we get that?
It should be available in early February. It would be then comparable to what you currently have.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Kresik. I think we've got time for Senator Kibbe.
Short question. You mentioned under the no-cost services, Iowa School Board Foundation. You didn't explain that very well. And I know universities have foundations, schools have foundations, hospital has foundation. What's the historic value of your foundation, and what's the purpose? And is the interest off the foundation used for some purpose, or how much funds are in your foundation? I don't know if that's it. Maybe you can get that to us.
The foundation had hoped to be an entity that would receive donations. It didn't. Maybe we have a few hundred dollars there. It exists also. I mean, one purpose of a foundation is to generate revenue. It doesn't. Another purpose of a foundation is that quite often a C3 organization that is issuing grants will only issue to another C3. So if we receive a grant, we then utilize that for the purposes of the grant. Any interest income is put back into the purposes of the grant.
So that's always been the case. It hasn't had a lot of money in it. It doesn't.
No. And I think
so why have
I
it?
Hope so.
Originally, if you notice, many school districts are developing foundations to help them finance public education. There was no place for a school district Y to go to find out how do you set it up, what do you do, how are the board members designated, and so one of the roles that they served was to provide advice and counsel to local school district foundations in the various school districts for the state of Iowa.
Thank you. I just heard it.
Thanks, Senator.
Some Duke. Huge foundation.
Yeah. Senator Greiner.
Thank you. I don't have any voice, so I'm going to get this closer. New to the committee, can you advise me, can LSA, is there someone from
Sue?
Okay. Thank you. I've got some questions, but I don't want to bore the entire committee, so I'm just going to touch base with her next.
Sue, can you stick around for a little while afterwards? Okay, thank you. And if you have an individual question, Sue, that will not be a committee meeting. It'll just be with her one-on-one. I guess I just have a couple of follow-up questions before we make some closing remarks here for today. And it's kind of the elephant in the room a little bit, so I have to address it. But the business programs exemption to the request for the emails, do those cover outside contracts with Skills Iowa, or are those going to be included in what would be the emails that you're ready to deliver?
I would defer to Susie. I would say that that's all open. Once a grant is issued, it should all be public, in this case, federal funded. When I talked about the business program, I'm talking about negotiations around fees that we try and negotiate to the lowest point for our members. Once that's done, what the fee was in 2007, I don't care who knows that. I'm talking about if in 2011, we sit down, if our members come to us and say, there's a service we need, can you see what you can do on a pool basis? And we have meetings with our board to determine whether to set that up as another business services and how the funding might go for members. That, I think, those initial discussions on what I'm saying would seem to need to be confidential. Once everything's in place, unless I'm misspeaking here, it's open.
Good. Thank you. Thank you. That's all. Sorry, that's all I had. I'd turn it over to Senator for closing.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one quick thing. I know everybody's tired of the screaming outside in the attic, but remember when your kids were little or your grandkids and they kept getting in the candy jar and stealing candy and said, don't do that anymore. And eventually they figured it out and they quit stealing candy. You went in the room and they were right beside the candy jar. And you said, wait a minute, you've been in that candy jar? No, I really haven't. You know how you have trouble believing them? Well, that's what's going on here. So much stuff was going on. And then when we get, as Representative Bottler said, we get things and they're lined out with grease pencil. I'm sure I have no reason not to believe that's a good explanation. But it looks odd to us. Just lay it all out so we can get this over with. It's like every time we turn around, there's some little thing that's not quite, we're not quite sure about. And the open meetings thing, I served on the school board for a long time. Just open everything up, and just open everything up that you can possibly open up, unless it's a contract or something. Just open it up and quit this stuff, and then the Des Moines Register will leave you alone, and we'll sure as heck leave you alone, and you can go on about your business. But stop making it look like you're hiding stuff all the time, because I really deep down inside don't think you are. But quit making it look like that. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
And we aren't, and I appreciate your comments, and we'll continue to do everything we can so it doesn't look that way.
And I guess I'll just wrap up by saying thank you for being here today. I understand that you'll be here tomorrow. For tomorrow, I want to make sure we get a good chunk of our time for the audit itself. So we may have you here, or those of you that can be here, with a few follow-up questions, but I think the majority of our time tomorrow should be spent with the audit itself. One comment that was made earlier is you want to work together with us, and we want to work with you. This committee is going to be looking at what legislation needs to be put together to prevent things similar to this from happening in the future, and who better to give us the information on how that went sideways than you all. So I want what we do here to be constructive about getting us down that path. And we're going to get to the bottom of this, and we're committed to that. But we're also committed to, on behalf of the taxpayers of Iowa, from doing whatever we can to prevent these kinds of abuses from happening again. So thank you, everyone, for being here. And Representative Bother moves we adjourn.
Are we looking at 9:30 or 10 tomorrow?
10 o'clock tomorrow. Same time, same place.
Trent and I have some competition.
Yeah.